don't want to see you coming back in here with fucking junkies. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained junkies.
Look at anybody going sitting up a pint with those boys after that.
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
But it's gone to John Murphy. Look who's coming forward, Horst Lawler. He can wrap it up in Tullamore. Horst scores for the shot. It's a goal! Yes! And a bag of goal to the stand!
Yes! What a goal!
Oh my word! Carlo blowing Kildare away. They've blown them away in Tullamore. The Kildare crowd are leaving. They thought they were playing no one today. They wrote us off on Twitter. They wrote them off everywhere. 2:14 to 1:10. This is Carlo's day. I hope we're enjoying this one.
The brilliant Brendan Hennessy there from KCLR FM on commentating on Carlo's second goal in their 2:14 to 1:10 win over Kildare in the Leinster quarterfinal. You're very welcome to the so-called weaker podcast, Balls.ie's weekly GEA show, focusing on the so-called weaker counties in GEA. It's Mick McCarthy here along with Mark Farley and Gavin Cooney.
How are you?
Lads, this is kind of, we set this up however long ago, 16 weeks ago now. This is episode 16. And last Sunday, the results just came in. And we were, well, I was going to say floored, more by what's happened over the course of the year. Not necessarily that surprised by the results themselves. But Longford beat Meath, Carlow beat Kildare. What an amazing week for the so-called weaker counties.
Lads, I think we've got this all wrong. I think we need to rethink our whole podcast. We've been focusing on the so-called weaker counties, but we need to start focusing on the weaker counties. And obviously the weaker counties are your Kildares, your Monaghans, your Tyrones, your Galways. These are the teams that look like they need the leg up and a bit more coverage. Because what does Carlow don't need us anymore. Fermanagh don't need us anymore. Longford don't need us anymore.
I'm fed up at the fake mainstream media misrepresenting my views. I mean, there's loads of talk this week of how Carlow and Longford pulled off these massive shocks. But I think if you listen not only to the most recent
Brendan
edition,
just said it there 2 seconds ago that everybody wrote them off.
But Brendan evidently doesn't listen to this show and hasn't listened to this show for 16 straight weeks, in which at least one of us has been banging the drum that Longford and Carlow would both win this weekend.
At least one of us, or just one of us, at that being
just one of us.
Well, look,
we were all on the Carlow bandwagon. The fake mainstream media, as you call them, have all jumped on the Carlow bandwagon in the last couple of weeks. You've seen, especially the last few days, you've seen interviews with Carlow people all around the place. But I'd like to think that we didn't maybe build the bandwagon. I'll give the Carlow panel that credit and Toto O'Brien. They had some input into this.
Very generous.
But we definitely put the spoiler and the alloys on the bandwagon. I think we were there from the start. We were involved in the construction. Mm.
There's a great glory in anticipating the bandwagon. Yeah. And that's what we did.
Well, luckily, Carlow superstar and regular match reporter on the show, Sean Gannon, hasn't forgotten what side his bread is buttered on, or, well, we don't butter his bread at all, but, you know, he hasn't forgotten that we've been there from the start, and he has graciously agreed to join us, and we'll talk to him in a few minutes, and really looking forward to that. We will also talk a little bit more about Longford's let's not cast aside Longford too much. We talked about La Decima. It's not going to happen. They're not going to be in round one of the qualifiers this year, but they did beat Meath. Gavin has been, I think Gavin more than Dennis Connerton has been kind of penciling that date in the calendar in for so long. You went there, you got the job done. Comfortable enough win?
Yeah, I know, absolutely comfortable enough. Yeah. It's a weird atmosphere at it as well, actually.
They were confident?
Maybe. I don't know. I think maybe that we've underestimated our reach here.
We'll get more details on that game, and we'll talk about some of the other stories going on with Mark, which we usually do now. We're also going to do something very interesting. You heard Brendan Hennessy's commentary there a minute ago. Mark's been delving into the archives to look for some of the best local commentary moments of all time, and just to tell us exactly what makes a great local commentary.
Yeah, I put together a guide on how to be a local commentator.
Okay. Yeah, so anyone listening there, if you want to be the next Brendan Hennessy or Willie Hegarty, Mark's going to set you up. It's basically a 3-year college course in the space of 10 minutes that he's going to give you later on. But he will take us around the so-called weaker counties. But we just want to mess up the format a little bit now, and we're going to speak to Sean Gannon next.
I would love it if Cork beat them. Yeah. Also, can we talk about the fact that we're just walking out to Dan, one of them turned to the other one. Ashford's great to be back in Division 1.
I get really quiet, but I'll tell you something. He went down in my estimation when he said that. We have not resorted to that.
Let Cork beat them and then Cameron Tipperary goal.
But I'll tell you, you can tell him now if you're watching it, we're still fighting for this title.
And I'll tell you now, they're still fighting for this title. And they've got to go Cork and get something.
And he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something.
I think they're at home against Cork.
We just say things like that.
They're at home against Cork there.
And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
I would love it if Cork beat them.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
Love it.
We've got Sean Gallen on the line with us now. Sean, first up, have you got anything to say to Colm Cooper for wrongly accrediting Paul Broderick with your point in the first half?
Well, look, it's a fair mistake to make. Two lovely left foot. one of all of us. So, and like, in fairness, Paul only scored 11 points, so maybe he needed my one as well. Just
to
really
up.
Big his head up.
What was it like afterwards? What was it like Sunday night after winning that game? There were unbelievable scenes, obviously, on the pitch afterwards. But just tell us about the night then.
It was crazy, really. We all went back to Cabin or Spatter there, and like, there was as many people outside as there was inside. There was just no room to move. There was people up on shoulders. It was kind of a crazy night now, but it was unbelievable. Like, just to see all the Carlow supporters in celebrating, like, and everyone was elated. Like, it was just brilliant.
Yeah, this might seem a strange question to ask, but I think it's relevant in the current GAA climate that we've got at the moment, Sean. But how important is it to be allowed to just be allowed to celebrate these kind of results?
Well, like, they don't come around too often. Like, I think this is my 10th year involved in the panel, and there's very few really memorable days as such. It was a tough time for a long time. So when these kind of wins do come around, I think it's very important for, not just for the players, but even for the supporters, to just go out and enjoy themselves with the players. And it's nice to just let the hair down as well, like, now and again, and relax. Because we're putting in a big effort during the week, and when we do get wins like that, it's just brilliant to go and enjoy it.
There seems to be great camaraderie in the group. Is that something that Thurlow's brought in terms of trying to, you know, get everybody on the same page and enjoying their football?
Yeah, well, Thurlow's very good that way. Like, I mean, man, management-wise, he's as good as anyone in the country. And he kind of knows how we all tick, and whether it's a pat on the back or a kick in the hole, as such as to say, he knows what to do, and he's able to do that. And that kind of keeps us all together. Everyone is always in good spirits and happy enough, and it keeps us all on the one level as such. So I'd love to go down to Thurlow as well, but there's an awful lot of kind of characters in the group as well that just makes, you know, Tuesday and Thursday going training, that something good is going to happen. So you look forward to it, you know, and you enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard Turlan off the ball, Sean, talk about how it's as much a player-led environment as it is a manager or coach-led. How's he created that?
I just think that he probably inherited a squad that had 10 to 15 lads who've been around an awful long time. And we were putting in an effort, but probably not really. We were probably cutting corners over the years, if we're brutally honest about it. So it was kind of, we got together over the last couple of years to say, look, we haven't got that many years left together. Let's really put in the effort. And in terms of our lifestyle off the field, and especially our gym work, we've really upped it, you know, and just trying to be able to match the bigger teams physically, which is something I think we're doing now. We're as big as anyone really around, and we're very confident in that as well. So I think that an awful lot comes down to that.
Would you also put it down to maybe the club championship in Carlow was very strong in terms of there's great rivalries in it? Was there always an issue maybe putting that aside and focusing on the county? A lot of so-called weaker counties, as we like to call them here, sometimes say that in terms of that the club is nearly more, you know, obviously the club's important everywhere, but that they don't really care about the county as much because they're not getting the wins, and that when you get that aside and get everybody on the same page, you can make a big difference.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that. Even my own club, Airog, like, for years, the setup wasn't fantastic with the Carlow team, and training wasn't going well and all the rest. So you had to kind of look for something else to look forward to, and the club was the obvious thing. Now, there's huge rivalry, and there still is huge rivalry when we go back out playing with the clubs. But it's just now that we're together for so long, so it's what, 8-9 months of the year we're together now. So it's kind of, you're only with the club at the most, maybe a month 2 months if you get to a county final. So it's kind of, the dynamic is shifting a little bit, and you tend to spend a lot more time with your with the county players than you do with your own club mate training and that. So I don't know if that's helped, but there doesn't seem to be any kind of bitterness behind anyone now in terms of club rivalries. You don't see the training anyway, so it's something that's definitely improved and something that's helped us, you know.
Yeah, Sean, you mentioned that there's some big characters in the Carlow dressing room. Can you take us inside the dressing room and give us an impression of some of those characters in there?
Well, there's one obvious one, like, and it's Sean Choo Choo Murphy. he's a different breed, like, you know, and even the story with him shearing 50 sheep that's not a lie, like, he's just, that's what the man does, and he works, like, he gets up early, does a little bit on the farm, he goes off and works 9 to 5 himself, goes back and does an extra bit on the farm. Training kind of gets in the way, so he only lives up the road from our training centre, and like we'd be all, we'd train at 7:30, everyone would be there, like Gareth Foley would be there from 6:30 kicking trees, and about 29 minutes past 7, we were just getting ready to start, and Sean Murphy jumped the fence, wearing some sort of Jack Jones t-shirt or something after getting all the gear he did all year. And he just arrived in and started belting balls. He's outside of his boot without a warm up ending. He's different gravy. He's brilliant. But then you have, it's mad. We have the horse, who obviously scored the goal the other day. You have the bear, Edmund, the panda, Jamie Walsh. We have more animals on the team than we have anything really, you know. So.
Yeah, I was going to follow up with the nickname games very strong in the Carlow dressing room. Horse Lawler. What did you say? Choo Choo Murphy.
Choo Choo, yeah, the train they call him Choo Choo.
Yeah, that was the Brendan Hennessy thing. It was cut off at the start. They didn't have it, but just the line before the clip that's been up on SoundCloud, it was like, here comes the Choo Choo coming like a train. And then, and look who's coming now, it's Horse Lawler.
At no point did Brendan Hennessy clarify that Horse Lawler is not his actual first name.
We can hear, even when we're playing, when Choo Choo gets the ball, you can just hear the crowd going, Choo Choo, it's mental. Like, it gives a great boost.
Oh, it's brilliant. Like, that is the thing, though. It's trying to get that, like we're saying, the camaraderie going in the dressing room. That, like, has this, like, you said it's your All Ireland to get it promoted in the league. With the championship now, is it just that you're growing in belief after, to go on Kildare, it's one game at a time. And now, of course, playing Laois in the semi final, you've played them twice already in the last couple of months. What have you learned from that, and what do you think you can take into that game?
Well, look, the obvious thing is, I don't know whether it was the Croke Park thing or what, like, most of us have played Croke Park before, but obviously there was a few guys, it was the first time, and so the first 14 minutes, 15 minutes, we were fighting it down, didn't really show up, and we're chasing the game completely after that. So we'll be looking to get a kind of stronger start, like we did against Kildare. Hopefully if we can stay in it early, we'll be much more competitive from the second half, when we tend to kind of to kick on, you know. And I don't know if it's on the fitness levels or what, but we seem to have a very strong second half. We haven't lost the second half in over a year, you know, since the Monaghan game, I think. So that's something we've looking. Try to keep it tight in the first half and then move on. I think Carlo said yesterday, on the Sunday game, that he told us not to kick any points. Or sorry, not to kick any wides. I don't understand why he waited 4 years, because it's a great tactic. Like,
yeah.
It took me 4 years to tell us about this thing, but it works really well. So we might try that again as well.
Looking from the outside in, Laois and Carlow has developed into a pretty feisty rivalry this year, Sean. Is there an extra edge when Laois come to town?
Yeah, well, they're like, I'm obviously from Carlow town, and we have Greg Cullen who's from Laois. It's literally I can actually see it from here, so 50 metres away. Like, so there's a big rivalry there, and it tends to, like, when we're getting challenge games with clubs and all the rest, we kind of go to Laois and they come to us to get games. So we play each other regularly and we know each other very well, and they've had the upper hand of us for a long time. Like, so it'd be great to just get one up for the Carlow supporters as such as anything. But again, like, they've kind of got our number twice already this year, so we will be underdogs, but we'll give it a rattle anyway.
Yeah, one other thing that struck me throughout the year, Sean, is there has been criticism and at times kind of sneering criticism of Stephen Poacher particularly and of the Carlow team overall, and it seems to be something that you don't mind having to go back at on Twitter and laughing at after victories. I guess that's something you're all keenly aware of.
Yeah, well, all has been the criticism of Poacher is extremely justified, I think, but the harsh on the rest of us really, you know. But yeah, look, the people are calling us a defensive team, but like, if you're realistic about the people who are doing that, they're not at our games. Like, they don't see how we play. We're racking up big scores realistically. Like, so if they want to throw it out there, we'll have a pop back and have a bit of crack, because ultimately, like, it's about when trying to enjoy the experience. It's not going to last forever. Like, I mean, Carlo are, they're goldust as such on social media at the moment, but that hasn't always been the way. So when it does happen, we just, we'll try and make the most of it, because I'm sure next year will be someone else's year. So while we have the opportunity, we'll make the most of it.
Do you think as well that there's sometimes people don't understand teams can be in development? Like, maybe you, when Steve came in first, no Toro Samba as well, about developing a defensive system, and then you get that right first, and then develop your attacking speed and transition and all that stuff that comes along with it, which is, obviously it's nonsense to dismiss all these terms or whatever. Like, it's just, as Daniel and Deirdre said earlier on in the year of the podcast, that it's just a way of easily describing what you're trying to do, that, you know, this thing takes time, and people kind of just take it, and, you know, you've gone from maybe being defensive to kicking at the weekend, not kicking a single wide, and putting up scores like 216, 215 regularly in games.
Yeah, and that's a very important point. Like, I mean, when Stephen came in, I think we had the second worst, maybe even the worst defensive record in the country, in the National League. And I think, I don't know, last year we were maybe third or fourth best. So, like, you have to get that, you have to get the house in order first, obviously. And he's done that fantastically. But obviously, that, like you said, it takes time. And I'm doing a little bit of coaching myself with the Car IT Sigerson team. And obviously, it's a different animal there, because you only have a couple of months with the college team. But, like, Stephen knew that it was a 2 to 3 year thing that he was trying to work on. So slowly but surely, he got the defensive thing right. And it did take us a while to get used to it. And we weren't very good at the transition, as he called it. And I know Parkinson loves it. But it took us a good while to kind of be able to commit forward to where we are now. And people didn't give him time on it. And it was as much the media as even our own people in Carlow. Like, they really set fire on Stephen for that. But, I mean, it's kind of reaping the rewards now. And, like, we're very happy with Stevie. He's obviously a great character in the dressing room. He's always having a laugh and a joke. And, like, he really believes in enjoying ourselves after games as well. And he's bringing an awful lot to the setup, and we're very lucky to have him. I know Marty Clark is trying to poach him there, but he can hold on for another couple of years.
Would you notice now as well, with your work as a coach around Carlo with kids and all that, that there's a much bigger interest in Gaelic football given the success of the team?
It's brilliant. Like, obviously, as a GDA, they were Carlo GDA. Like, I'm, at the moment, I'm just standing at the side of the pitch. We have 220 kids from Bishop Hall, you know, and, like, I was out in Grange yesterday. I brought a couple of the players out. John Murphy came out, and Jordan Morrissey, like, and all the kids know them now. I mean, 2-3 years ago, like, they wouldn't know them from Adam. So it's amazing. And even, like, see the top jersey corner, because for years there was Clare jersey, Dublin jersey, and the Kenny jersey being walked down Carlow, but now all you see is the traffic light colours, I suppose, which is brilliant. And it's making my job an awful lot easier, so long may it continue.
Yeah, and just even this year alone, how far you've come. When you think back, like we were saying, we had Daniel on our first podcast, our first ever one of the so-called Week of Counties, talking about the fact that he couldn't have neutral umpires for the Carlo London game over in London. It's some difference the last 6 months have made.
Yeah, it's still going to be very hard to find some neutral umpires, because we seem to be everyone's kind of second favourite team at the moment. I'm sure it won't last forever. If we continue to keep getting the wins, there won't be long turnout on us. But look, there's some hype behind it. Like, it's fantastic, and it's unheard of in these parts of the county or the country, really. You know, so I really can't get over in the job. Even the cool camp numbers, things like that, like, they're gone massive. They're gone through the roof. And I suppose an awful lot. Don't forget the hurlers. Like, we are a dual county as well, and the hurlers are gone up to Division One as well. So everything seems to be, I suppose, a rising tide lifts all boats, and that seems to be the case in Carlow.
Good stuff. Well, Sean, we obviously are fully behind you. we're not even going to hide our bias for going into Carlo Leash. We're hoping for a Carlo win and get you to the Leinster final. Best of luck with that, and thanks very much for taking the time to chat to us.
That's brilliant, lads. Thanks for everything. Talk to you soon.
Cheers, Sean.
Sinead is our sound woman here on Terrastock, but she's gone to hear Beyonce.
New girl.
Beyonce.
Beyonce's not his wife, is that what you're saying?
Beyonce. So Sinead has gone to hear Beyonce.
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 Well, there's obviously a new girl and that.
Beyonce is playing.
Who's here?
Good night,
Bianca.
Send the message,
yeah, we all said it.
Good night, Bianca. Hey, baby.
Emotional.
Very emotional.
Very emotional.
And I hope it doesn't happen to Bianca.
I'm going to say it, lads. Sean Gannon is the best character currently playing in the GAA, and possibly including former players and pundits as well.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm interested in Sean Murphy after hearing what Sean said there on the interview, but he's definitely the best cracker value we've had on the show, I think. And that's no disrespect to anybody else that's been on it, but it's great to see that kind of camaraderie, like we're saying, and the cracker. But the nickname thing is something that I've always been hoping to do on Balls, is to find the GA team with the best nicknames.
Holly Brady looks a bit shit now, Mark, doesn't it?
And also it's just the sheer the vastness of the nicknames in the Carlow team is unbelievable. Like, we're not too bad ourselves in our local club. We've got Roundy, we've got a few good nicknames going around.
How's Roundy? How did you label Roundy? How did he get his name?
Oh, I couldn't divulge that.
I don't know, is that nickname? That feels like a kind of mental warfare.
What do you mean?
Calling him Roundy.
I don't know, yeah. I suppose he had carried some winter weight a few years ago. He's actually a thin person. But anyway, there's Roundy, there's Scat, there's Buzz, there's God, many.
Mad Dog, yourself.
Yeah.
No, Mad Dog, apparently. We don't mention that name.
We don't, sorry.
But every GA team has an abundance of nicknames, but I think Carlo's are the best collection I've heard of so far.
Yeah, well, if you're in a GA team out there, get in touch with your nicknames, see if you can one up the Carlow team.
Yeah, I'd love to hear from you. The nicknames won't win them a Leinster semi-final against Laois, but their football might. Their accuracy stat, Mark, you've been banging on about this, we had it up on site. The most accurate performance in the history of anybody keeping stats, according to at Don Fowle on Twitter, one of the best statisticians in the GAA.
Not a single wide, one drop short, which they scored a goal from.
Yeah.
And as Sean said, all it came down to was Toro just saying to go out and not kick any wides.
Yeah, and so look, listening to the manager, I suppose, I don't know, there's a lot to be said for it, I suppose. You know, don't kick wides, you're going to win football games, you know. So, I don't know, I think we should mention at this juncture, as a Division 4 champions, I suppose, could be treated as a so-called weaker county, and certainly later in the season when they're not playing Carlow, they will be. But they scored a huge amount against Westmeath. And, I mean, a game that we thought was going to be close, they absolutely hammered Westmeath. So, Laois are on a roll. I don't know if they've even lost a game this year, have they?
I was just actually thinking that.
These 9 straight wins.
When we were just before the interview, even when we said it, we're saying to Sean, but we're hoping Carlow can get to the final. Like, Laois' success, we've kind of been a little bit blind to it, I think, in this podcast, if we're being honest, up against Carlow with it, that they deserve credit for what they've been doing, because they were in a couple of years there where, like, you could see even in the league in that the last couple of years where they had decent players, but they just could never get either everybody on the same page. There were lads, you know, leaving the panel, all that kind of crack that other counties have had to contend with as well. But they seem, John Sugar's got everybody pulling in the right direction now, and they're a really impressive outfit.
Well, it's just the quality of their forwards, you know. Like, Ross Munley's still there. Kingston's Gary Walsh. I mean, it was a pull kick 3-2 against Westmeath. Now, that was kind of like Westmeath, but were completely decimated by injury and any other mental things. I think Desi Dunn was making the point on Twitter that I could be wrong now. Is it only 6 players left from last year to play that game?
Yeah.
I think something as low as that. Sorry, I shouldn't be just throwing that out with abandon because I'm not sure the number 6, but it's somewhere in that ballpark.
Yeah, when your vice captain's gone to America, your captain John Heslin's out injured as well. That's obviously going to decimate a team.
So Laois versus Carlow is going to be the first Leinster semi final. The second semi final is going to involve Dublin. No surprise there. And Longford. No Dublin Meath this year.
No.
The new age Leinster rivalries have begun, and Laois, Longford and Carlow are 3 of the last 4 in Leinster, which I think is fantastic. But Gavin, you made the trip down to Glennon Brothers Pierce Park.
Yeah. Just to preface this with, it's time for a few new adages in the GA. So the Dubs won't fear Longford, I think, is something that we really need to get behind. Yeah, no, Longford, comfortable winners, really. It was 2 points
in the
end.
This is going to be horrible, isn't it, Mark? This is getting you back for all your cabin talk earlier in the year.
Yeah, no, Longford are very good. They deserve to win. It was drawn, it was levelled at 7 points apiece at half time. And Longford were a little bit lucky in the sense that Meath missed three very easy goal chances. And they just put them wide rather than just put them over the bar. But Longford kicked on, were much better in the second half. The turning point was when I thought Michael Quinn fouled Graham Riley.
The influential Michael Quinn.
The influential Michael Quinn exerted his influence, in my opinion, by fouling Graham Riley. But the referee decided to give a free to Longford for a pick off the ground. They took it quickly. Longford broke. They scored a point. And in the ensuing break, Andy McEntee's son, his first name is momentarily left my mind, he was sent off for an off-the-ball incident. Shane McEntee, thank you very much. He was sent off for an off-the-ball incident on Rian Brady. So that kind of killed the game, really. And Longford, well, Longford went up 5 points up, but then Meath rallied, got back to a point, and then Sean McCormack kicked a late winner to seal it for Longford.
It's pretty incredible. I think, as we were saying earlier, and you hinted at this, that you were the only one with faith. It was like, we did pick Longford and Carlo with the spread in the accumulators last week. I didn't go for the overall wins, just kind of being safe, I suppose, with an accumulator. But we did kind of see this coming. Longford's performances in Division 3 were very impressive all year. They really should have beaten Armagh, possibly robbed, or as you might say, horsed in that game. And, you know, their form was definitely showing this, whereas Meath really struggled in Division 2. It's a big shock on paper just because of the two counties that's involved. But, I suppose what I'm saying is, like, did Longford look like a better team than Meath, or did they just play better on the day?
I actually think Longford's forwards are talented, if not probably more talented as a unit than Meath, because Meath have clearly worked very hard in the training ground about setting up defensively, and they draw plenty of players back. And they didn't really pressure the ball a whole lot outside of their own 45, so they're happy enough to sit off and let Longford come at them. But it was just like Meath will look back at the tape and whatever they'll call the scoring zone or the red zone. They didn't allow Longford in that very often. But it's just the quality of Longford point scoring really killed them. You know, Longford are famous for so many Leinster Championship games down through the years. Longford will be in touch at half time, come out in the third quarter, play really well, kick 4 points, but kick 8 wides as well, and then everybody will be bemoaning the wides in the second half. Their shot selection was quite good, I really think that one of the turning points, possibly the thing that separated Longford from Meath in the end, was just the quality of the point scoring on offer from Longford.
The reward is a trip to Croke Park to play Dublin, who managed to beat Wicklow by 23 points. In Moore Park in Portlaoise on Sunday. The spread for that game, as we talked about last week, was 22 points. I decided I was scared of it, and they beat it by 1 point, which is just, it's amazing how they get these spreads so right. But 23 points, that was poor Wicklow. I mean, I think it was like 2-8 to no score at one stage. But
Can I mention that from my trip to Pierce Park, I figured out how to stop Dublin.
Yeah.
So obviously, as we know, the rock upon which Dublin's church is built are Stephen Cluckson's quick kickouts. But I saw in Longford,
and Dean Rock.
The Dean Rock and upon which it's built. But Longford kept trying to take quick kickouts in the first half. But the net from behind the goals in Pierce Park at the McDonald's end, I suppose it's called, it was pulled really tight. So anytime the ball was kicked either over the bar or wide, it would hit it.
Bounce.
It would bounce, rebound onto the pitch, and then the umpires, apparently it's not within their remit to go get the ball, the lazy people. So then the quick kickout would be blown up until the second ball was got off the pitch. So that's what we need to do. What Longford needs to do is Croke Park is to pull. There's a little bit of a sag in the nets, particularly the one behind at the canal end in Croke Park. So you just tighten them up, and then the ball will rebound off it onto the pitch.
Not sure they'll be allowed anywhere near them, though, to be honest, will they?
Don't know. I think it's worth it.
How about having ball boys just throw balls onto the pitch?
I have seen
once
or twice.
This is what we need.
I have seen
this
once or twice in club games.
It's how to beat Dublin.
Once or twice in club games, some gentle souls from the opposition sideline kick a ball into a goalkeeper of the opposition to help him, you know, with a quick kick out, despite the fact the goalkeeper had a ball in his hands already. That's some great skullduggery that you see the odd time where it's like, oh, hey, I was just kicking. Oh, sorry, I didn't think you had the ball.
I did begin the Twitter campaign online after this game to have this game played in Pierce Park. But a Dublin Sporting friend of mine tweeted me back, oh yeah, and let's just have a look at the seeding plan for that game. E1, E2, JCB, E4, E5, in a reference to the fact that while there is still building works going on at Pierce Park, the subsidence, not subsistence ridden stand is being rebuilt. But as a result, it closed off one of the town end, as it were, the terrace, and all that was parked on it was a digger.
So I thought, yeah, it was a great sort of mixture between modern stadiums and retro old style stadiums, where you had the bank at the behind the goals, but the bank was within the stand.
Yeah. I have one other thing to talk about from my trip to Pierce Park. I'm sorry, you're fed up. You can edit this out, but I did some celeb spotting.
All right, okay, now we leave this in, so.
Sometime comedian Rory Stories is at Miami. Yeah. Graham Garrity was in front of me. Graham Garrity, by the way, one of is probably one of the surprising entrants into people who listen to live radio from another match while watching a match. He had live commentary from Kildare on his phone. Yeah, and Bernard Flynn was there as well, taking selfies before the game.
Oh yeah.
Not, just with himself.
No, with Garrity and a punter.
Instagram Stories, Bernard Flynn.
So yeah, no, Bernard Flynn not exactly concentrating on the game ahead.
Right, well, I suppose he didn't really need to. He wasn't playing or anything, but that's very interesting. I was in Ennis, actually, for Clare versus Waterford in the hurling, and didn't spot anybody.
No.
No celebs spotting. Very disappointing, actually.
Even half the Waterford team didn't show up. Well, that didn't show up, but they didn't play.
Well, they went off. I saw them going off the pitch, actually, in various states of injury. Just we'll quickly say, because I think the home and away stuff and Gavin getting to go down to Pierce Park is phenomenal, and I think the more home games teams can have in Championship is brilliant, and it was a brilliant occasion in Cusack Park. It was Clare's first proper Championship game there in 30 years, their first of any kind since they played Kerry in 1997, and great atmosphere and everything like that. The one thing I'll say, though, is if these provincial grounds are going to start getting more games, we have to look at the facilities of them, because the state of the toilets in Cusack Park, I can't even actually get over it. It's so hard to explain. I went in and it was, the smell, first of all, would nearly knock you out. This is before the game now, so they hadn't got a chance. This is like about 20 minutes into the minor game, so there's not even that many people in the stadium yet. I went in. The urinal wall, which I'd say was built in 1936, was completely blocked with no water. The lights were off. It was completely dark. The floor was kind of ripped up. This is the main toilets behind the main stand now. The tap kind of spluttered out kind of cold water in various directions. There was no soap. It's literally hard to explain how disgusting it was. And I'm just thinking, like, that's fine for me there or whatever, but if I'm bringing a family, a small family, and it's mainly kids who are going to these games, what sort of a experience is that, like, you know? So just think that that's something that should be worth watching for. But
if you're bringing someone, you know, the Yanks or someone are over for the weekend as well,
I was thinking of that
GA game, yeah. As Michael Darren McCauley been on a bit in terms of marketing the sport properly, like, that's cat.
I was thinking of that. It's no place for anyone who hasn't grown up with it, I suppose, and we're just used to it and it's normal. But you kind of forget that actually it is so bloody bad, like, you know. So and I just don't think it costs a lot to build a new stand and bring up your attendance and get yourself all these neutral like games the way Thurles will or Limerick will or anything like that. It doesn't take that much to build a new toilet. Or a few new toilets in the course of a stadium. Anyway, I'm in full rant mode, so much so that I've forgotten the running order and where we're going next. But I do think it's probably time that Mark brought us around the weaker counties, because it was more, strangely enough, than just Longford and Carlow playing this
week. Yeah, but we spent so long talking about Longford, we don't have much time to chat about anybody else. So we're going to brush across it. We've got Kevin McSpace, speaking of stadiums, he's adamant that Roscommon are going to play in Hyde Park. So basically, the way it changes every year for the Connacht final, this year it's Roscommon's turn to get to it. Well, they are into it with Hyde Park, that it should be played there. But there's also talks that it would be moved because of capacity and all that kind of crack. So basically, McSpace is having absolutely none of it.
We are in the Connacht final. We have the home venue. It'll be played in the Hyde, I have no doubt. It will. And we'll certainly be turning up in the Hyde. I hope someone else is there to meet us on the day. And we'll be very, very absolute about that. Because, as I said, we're going to the Hyde on the 17th. Nowhere else. Bar, of course, Sligo, bring us to Castlebar if it's their call. We can live with that, of course. But I expect that reason will prevail over the next 24, 48 hours. You know, the council don't need it. Roscommon GAA definitely don't need any chaos around a fixture like this. And the national, you know, in a narrative where there's a lot of people putting their heads up and talking about the weaker counties not getting a fair share. I've just met the players, and you know, they're thrilled to be in another final. Like, this is their fourth Connacht final now in 3 years that we're getting ready for, and that's a great achievement for a bunch of young fellas, and they're so excited now about playing the first one in their young lives at home. And we had a long talk about this. We could only talk about it when we had Leitrim beaten. You'll understand, I had to respect their participation in the championship, unlike an awful lot of other people, unfortunately. And we are 100% united that the final's in the Hyde.
This happened to me in a Cumann na Munsell league final in primary school. We took to the field and the other team objected to the choice of referee and refused to take to the field. So we threw in a Pierce Park. We lined up. Ball was thrown up by the referee. Our midfielder caught it, soldered down the field, fisted the ball over the bar, and we won it by a point to nothing.
That's... I only thought that, I never realised that actually happened regularly. There's a famous clip, I think it was a league semi-final in Croke Park or something, Dublin and Cork anyway, where Cork came out for extra time, and they threw the ball in. I think Barney Rock just soloed up and kicked it into the net. And then that was the end of the game.
I'd be terrified if that was happening to us, because I'd definitely still kick it wide.
Yeah. To see that, well,
the pressure of having no one on it.
But then, like, I mean, then there's no one to kick it out. So there's now like bearded primary school children still out in the pitch waiting. Kick the ball out.
Well, there's your preview of the Connacht final. It's going to be a Roscommon win.
No, it won't be, because the game will be on wherever the Connacht Council decide it will be on. And that's where the tickets will be sold for, and that's where the referee will go. And if Galway or Sligo turn up, and the ball could be thrown up in an empty stadium, it could. A lot of farce. There's not very many football games on television this year, so if this is how they're gonna pick one of them for the Connacht final, and there's only gonna be one team there, could be interesting.
Yeah,
I kind of hope they stick to their guns, though.
I absolutely hope they do, because it must be remembered that they went and won in Salt Hill against Galway last year. Yeah. And the year before, they got to the final as well, but I think Hyde Park was still under redevelopment, so it wasn't suitable. So I think they probably drew in Salt Hill and played the replay in Mayo, isn't that it?
Can't remember.
I can't really remember, but I know they didn't play in Dr. Hyde Park.
They got poor Leitrim some hiding at the weekend.
They did, yeah. And
some of the weaker counties didn't win this week.
No, but some of them, I just want to also just quickly, before we finish, wrap this up, is two weaker counties who deserve a bit of credit that are being completely ignored and will have this chip on their shoulder for the rest of the championship. So what I want to get me shout in now is Cork for the resounding victory over Tipperary.
I couldn't believe that.
No one would have Cork seen. A weaker county.
Well, look at it. They're a mid-table Division 2 team.
Yeah, a brilliant win.
Yeah, unbelievable. Like, that's really, they deserve every credit. I know Tipperary had the 1 week turnaround from the Waterford game, but at the same time, it was Waterford.
They seem the one thing I'd like to say about that, though, I think it's important, is that Liam Kearns has been talking about that 6 day turnaround for a long time. Yeah. That's the kind of thing that gets into players' heads or gives them an excuse before they go out. How, like, it's not fair. It's not ideal. Make your point and move on. He shouldn't have been talking about how big a disadvantage Tipperary were at before they played Cork.
Yeah,
in my opinion,
I don't know. I mean, it evident. Like, I don't think, and Kearns said afterwards that while it was an issue, it can't justify the, what was it, 110, like 10 plus points margin. I can't remember what it was. But it's still a big issue, I think. And I think it should be pointed out the sheer absurdity of Tip playing Cork in Semple Stadium on a Saturday night during the Champions League final between 3,000 odd people. And the fact then Tip then played Cork on Sunday afternoon in Semple Stadium and they couldn't make it a double header. At least give them 7 days. It's crazy stuff.
Yeah. So one of the counties wouldn't agree to it. I think Cork didn't want it. Or
and while I like, and Kearns hasn't been using it as an excuse, and I think he's right to put it on the record and get it out there. And maybe you might say the players use an excuse. I think those Tip players have trained too hard and are too good to use it as an excuse.
Yeah, it's not using it as an excuse. It's more a subconscious thing, I think, that can creep in, that you're like, geez, I'm very tired.
I agree, yeah.
You don't even, you think, you know, you just, you don't think you can heal up, or I don't know, you're not even thinking. Do you know, it just happens.
You're being constantly told something, you start to believe it, and it starts.
The other problem, of course, is tactically, I wonder how much time, like, Cork are able to prepare for 5 or 6 weeks now for Tipperary. basically they knew they were going to play in Tipperary. They're able, you know, to get in. Of course, Tipperary did have to sort of, we can't look past the Waterford game, yada yada.
I don't know. You could, like, say
the management among themselves probably could and all that, but at the same time, you still have to go out to your players all the time going, as we need to win this game, we need to blah, blah, blah. And you could be training a little bit to gear up for Cork. But
yeah.
The other team, I just want to give a shout out to, are Derry, who lost by 6 points to Donegal, but losing by 6 points to Donegal for a team that's going to be in Division 4 next year is not a bad result at all.
No, losing by 6 points to Donegal is something.
This is a very depressing thing for Derry fans to listen to.
Well, look, it isn't. I know what sounds awful.
I'm not denying the reality of what you said, but I just think, my God, that's so sad.
Well, look, what can you say? Like, I mean, there's been some hammerings in the Ulster Championship over the last few years.
And there has been more.
It never looked like Derry were going to win it or anything, but they did keep it going, keep in touch. And it shows you that if they had their all their players available for the whole of the league, they probably wouldn't have ended up getting relegated.
For sure.
Can I make one last point on Cork? John O'Connor, Sporting Cork, got in touch when I asked him. John, which is more accurate, Cork or back, or is it just still the Cork or Cork? And he says, Cork or back, best performance in years, made a decent team. Decent tip team look ordinary. It's a backhanded compliment there. I will give the Evil Empire a right rattle in the Munster final, assuming they'll be clear. The style of play was great to watch and the defending was excellent, with Sean Powder to come back into that team as well.
Yeah, I heard a couple of people say that they wouldn't get carried away quite yet, that Tip were pretty bad, but we'll wait and see, I suppose, what happens in the Munster final between Cork and Clare. Or Kerry. Briefly run through the qualifier draw, which is Derry and Kildare, two teams possibly in crisis.
Derry win that, by the way. Can I nail my colours to the mast now? Derry win that.
Yeah, I won't argue with you there. I wouldn't put money on it, but I definitely wouldn't.
A man with occlusion goggles could see that Kildare are not well.
Meade's reward for purposely avoiding Dublin, the Leinster semi-final, is a game with Tyrone.
Thank God Lanford won. I mean, that's a massive threat. Like, if we came out against Tyrone, it's a big threat to Ledesma.
Ledesma could have been a big trouble there, yeah. London versus Loud, a battle of two proper so-called weak counties.
I think London win that.
In current form, they're definitely... Yeah. That's still a big ask.
Pete
McGrath seems to hate his players. So I think London will win it.
Okay. Wicklow versus Cavan, you happy with that draw?
Well, as I said on Twitter afterwards, there's absolutely no way Cavan can lose to Wicklow in the qualifiers again.
Offaly versus Antrim.
Well, that game we moved, I wonder, to Portlaoise. Sorry, just...
There's Ockram cutting, possibly. Yeah. What about the Cavan season ticket holders?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Christ almighty.
Offaly versus Antrim. Antrim well beaten by Down. Offaly... under new manager Paul Rouse. I think that could be interesting. Limerick versus Mayo. God bless you, Limerick. What an amazing draw for Mayo.
Mayo, as is the rule with Mayo, will only win that by a score.
Possibly, but they're not going to lose it. I don't think under any circumstances. Westmeath versus Armagh and Wexford versus Waterford. Wexford, decent enough. I think that result, that performance by Wexford against Laois looks even better now after what happened on Sunday.
Yeah.
Mm.
So... interesting stuff. These are a lot of it. We'll be saying goodbye to a good few so-called weaker counties in just a couple of weeks. Sad time of year. Sure, we'll talk about some commentators, will we?
We shall.
A case of daylight robbery. Disgrace. Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful.
This is outrageous.
That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
Disgraceful. This is all wrong. This is all wrong.
Oh, this shouldn't happen. That is disgraceful. Disgraceful.
So, Mark, we heard from Brendan Hennessy from KCLR's brilliant commentary of Carlo's second goal on Sunday. It's got you in particular reminiscing, really, about some of the great local commentary moments. And you've kind of put together a little bit of a college course for people on how to become a great local GAA commentator.
This is a quick guide now. First of all, I'm going to put in my first piece of advice, which doesn't have an audio clip, is just that if you are doing it, make sure to remember to take down the events of what's happening and scores as you're commentating. I've had that issue before where you forget to write down. You can only do one thing at the one time, so you can take down scores when you're off air, and then when you go to commentate, you forget. But that's just for anyone who really wants to become a commentator. These other guides are a bit... the rest of this guide is a bit more off the wall. First of all, you've got to name... when you have a big win, you've got to name... as many places as you can around the county or around the world, even sometimes. But you know, people listening in from wherever it is, Timbuktu, Kinnegad, all these places. So first example of this is Sean Walsh and Connor Hayes on Galway Bay FM when Galway finally won
the Lee McCarthy Cup last year.
29 years of agony, 29 years of frustration, from Clifton to Ballinasloe, from Ceylon to Kilbeckity, you're going to see Liam McCarthy. We think of Tony Keeney, we think of Joe McDonagh, we think of Niall Donoghue, we think of Michael Corcoran, we think of every great hurling person that has left us in the massive, massive time of 29 years. Galway have won the All-Ireland Senior Championship title. They won the National Hurling League. They won the Leinster Final in their fourth final of the year. Niall Donoghue and David Bourke has worked the Oracle.
Now, another example of that is Brendan Hennessy, who shows up in this a few times. And, the inspiration for this piece, it also shows up in a lot. This is back when Mount Leinster Rangers had that brilliant year in the club championship. Himself and Terence Kelly were on air to celebrate a win.
It has to be over. Mount Leinster Rangers are over. They're into the Leinster final. The celebrations in Dr. Cullen Park. This has been a day for Carlo Hurling, for Carlo people, for Rahana, for Bally Murphy, for Forrest, and for KCLR. This is what GA is all about. The pride of the parish. They're on the field in their thousands. 117-39. The village has bet the city. Kurt Kelly, congratulations.
Now, Brendan,
one of the great towns in Carlow.
In that said Leinster final, Brendan went on to break the fourth wall, and in the middle of his commentary, right at the end of it, we were going, "Will we end up on Ballinasloe League this week, Terence? That's the question."
Did he actually? Go yes. on, Brendan. Can I make a tangential point that, like, and maybe it's more a national level, Micheál O'Maherty did a lot, but he'll preface an All-Ireland final or some big game by essentially doing the US State Department's work for them by naming a load of people in an Irish bar somewhere with no green card. Probably don't want to be identified whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't know if that's an issue when you're naming places in Rathvilly and the like in Carlow. Someone who doesn't...
Oh, the illegal US citizens in Rathvilly.
Also, Brendan, I want to give Brendan a shout. This is really a quick clip. If you've got to get in as much kind of rural phrases and tongue as you can, syntax maybe some might say, into celebrating any win. This is when Carlo won in the first round of Leinster last year, and they're going to be up against the Dubs.
Willie, Carlo and the Dubs, Sky Television, the whole shebang. Where would you get it?
Where would you get it?
The whole shebang.
The whole shebang.
You might get to this, so sorry if you do, but I feel that listeners will hear a common thread so far of commentators shouting, possibly as loud as they can, because of an inability to contain their emotion and being on the verge of tears.
Yes.
Almost no matter what they're talking about.
It's almost like, and you genuinely didn't know what was coming next.
No.
But the next two tips I have for you, if you want to become a local commentator, is one, shout the whole way through the game to the point where you've lost your voice at the end of it, and two, break down in tears. Here's Derek Lynch and Niall Gilligan celebrating Clare's 2016 National League win.
It's all over! It's all over at Simba Stadium! And Clare have come from nowhere to win the Allianz National Hurling League title! Niall Gilligan, you've been involved in some days in Clare Hurling! What is it like?
That was just absolutely amazing, Derek. Amazing. 2 points, 2 points down with 2 minutes in the clock. You know, what character these lads showed. What character. The water of a crowd, the referees coming in there now, and the water of a crowd are blowing, and it's not nice to see. But, you know, whatever. You know, this is it was a brilliant performance.
Derek Lynch there sounded like a 14-year-old whose voice was breaking.
But also, the Allianz National Hurling League. Like, it's not... It's not the Munster title or the All-Ireland title.
It was a good day. I remember that. I was there.
Well,
were you as emotional as Derek?
I can't say I was now, to be honest. It was a good comeback, you see. You didn't think they were going to win it. That was the thing. It was a close game. It was a very, very close game. And
well, look at Gavin.
We ended up getting hammered to Waterford again a few weeks later in the first round of the championship until they took the gloss off somewhat.
All right, then if the National League isn't good enough here, Gavin, what about Clare getting that last gasp draw in the All-Ireland final in 2013? Because here's Cill O'Connell, Connor and Niall Gilligan, and I believe that Derek Lynch actually had to do that commentary 3 years later because Cill's voice hadn't come back yet after commenting on that Donal O'Donovan's equaliser.
Still holding on into Nicky O'Connell. Nicky O'Connell trying to go through to Donal O'Donovan. O'Donovan!
Yes!
O'Donovan! Sits it over the bar, leveling the sides here. Clare 25 points, Cork 316. There's no vice left in the commentary. It's all over. It's all over in Croke Park. Niall, 25 points to 316. The vice is nearly gone. Surely say something.
Was that the point that Marty dropped the Holy Moses?
Yeah,
it
was. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
better. I'm a bigger fan of that.
Holy Moses is pretty good. I'll give Marty one bit of credit.
Now, also, you've got to do, when you there's excitement like that, there's the roars and all that of excitement and your voice going, but when you lose, you've got to do complete and utter, you know, it's biased heartbreak, basically. Like, all of these, like, one rolling tip throughout the whole thing is to show incredible bias. And nobody does bias and heartache like the people of Mayo. Here's Michael D. McAndrew and Martin Carney after last year's All Ireland final defeat.
Wait goes on.
Yeah,
why? Why can't we just open that door?
This is just so cruel. Like, a Mayo team that has given absolutely everything on the day, that has just, again, they're chasing shadows at the moment, trying to get the ball back. This is beyond cruelty. This is sadism at its worst.
Sadism.
Oh.
Martin Carney, I prefer Martin Carney in full Mayo mood rather than an RTE,
yeah,
I have to say.
I'd agree, yeah. Pretending not to be biased while giving out about every decision that goes against the Mayo. But his funniest part in that commentary as well, actually, was during the game when it was the free, it was a free to Dublin, and he kept telling him to move it back.
Move it back. He's taking steps forward, ref. Also, of course, that last year's one failed in significance compared to John Casey's pleas after the 2016 final.
Nothing between them two teams. Absolutely nothing. Them fellas now have three All-Ireland medals in their arse pockets. And what have we, Mike? It's unbelievable. Is there ever a God going to smile on us? I mean, Killian was unreal from the freeze. I mean, left it till the bitter end. He's going to take that one home with him, Mike. That's all he's going to remember. Robbie dropping the ball, the penalty. Give us a break. For God's sake, that team deserves something, Mike. And that's just not... I mean, Dublin and Mayo, there hasn't been a kick of the ball. Draws, replays. Dublin snatching it by the minimum of margins. And the slightest little bit of luck, it's just hard to take now. And my heart bleeds for that team out there. And then look at them. That's tough going, Mike.
Jeez, I am weeping here.
The best part is the outro.
Yeah, that was exactly what I was going to say.
The plaintive song in the background. That's
incredible.
Extraordinary.
But we're all kind of... I was worried about this last tip because it kind of just puts you in a bad mood listening to all that. You know, you're just kind of a bit sullen after the whole thing. Yeah. So just to raise the spirits. Yes, we went... I've gone down to the masters of it all. Below in Radio Kerry. To Gary O'Sullivan and Weeshie Fogarty, and they're like, I mean, there's so many things you can learn from them. One of the things is to always bring in other sports when possible, but talk about them like true GAA people, almost like you know the thing that's going on and you watched it, but you're not fully sure what it is. It's that, you know, that soccer or that Formula One racing or some of them kind of things. Here's some commentating. I remember the Kerry Cork Munster final when Fionn Fitzgerald kicked that last minute equaliser from the sideline. There was also a James O'Donoghue penalty in that game that was really significant. And here's the boys celebrating the penalty.
James O'Donoghue! Goal! Absolutely a copybook penalty by James O'Donoghue, the Legion. Came up with the left leg, the goalie went to the right, and O'Donoghue stripped the ball way into the corner. Carrie, that was a copybook penalty.
I've seen fellas miss it in the Copa America last night.
Yes,
professional footballers.
And who won that game, by the way?
Chile won it.
Did you? Good for Chile.
Chile won it.
We're not ways from Chile today.
And we're not Chile here, because
we're not Chile, we're all on fire here today.
The sun is beaming down us. 2-11 to 2-11.
It's great chemistry between the two lads.
Oh,
perfect improv.
Isn't it? It's brilliant. Like, they do play-by-play commentary mixed with irreverent kind of chat and, for the want of a better word, banter perfectly down in Radio
Kerry. Played off each other so well.
Yeah, it's beautiful. We can all learn something from that.
I feel poor Willie Hegarty. I think it might have been just the absence of the right clip is very unfortunate.
Willie Hegarty, yes, deserves a minute. Well, hopefully we can, you know, we can play his Leitrim bit now coming out of this. I mean, Willie Hegarty, it's not just one tip you learn from Willie, it's everything. There's nothing you can single out, really. He has he's mixed all these together. He's got the real excitement, the shout. I mean, he could commentate on an under-12s Ryan C relegation final and make it sound like the All-Ireland final. He also has all those kind of, the, you know, he can bring in other sports to it. He can bring in the local kind of sayings and all that stuff, like, a, you know, lads, yeah, coming up the pitch like a sheep through a gap, all that stuff. Look who's coming up, Horse Lawler, as Brendan Hennessy say, all that kind of crack. So Willie is the master.
So, anyone who has any interest in becoming a local radio GEA commentator, Mark's module, you just got a taste of it there. It is available. Just contact Mark at balls.ie.
Yeah, £5,000 a semester.
£5,000 a semester. You've basically got it all there. I feel like we've given it away. We've kind of made a bit of a mistake there. But, you know, if you do want to have more conversations with Mark,
it's content marketing.
Nobody with a neutral or Dublin accent need apply.
McGovern has it inside to the substitute. This can win it for Leitrim. It's kicked in. Leitrim leads. Leitrim have taken the lead in Gaelic Park in New York. Noel Duncan has kicked it over the bar, and Leitrim, who were dead and buried, every 8 seconds Leitrim lead by a point. And Leitrim, it looks like they have survived by the skin of their teeth. It's all over. It's all over. Leitrim have survived by the skin of their teeth.
Okay, guys, we're nearly finished. We have to look a little bit ahead to next week, and we'll do so with our weekly GA accumulator.
We're so close.
Now,
so close.
Well, hold on now. We won some money last week for the first time all year on me. Traditionally, the worst accumulator picker.
Famously,
I would say. Yeah, the whole country knows it at this stage. But I did have a bit of a winner last week. It was a slight push, but you'd get money back for it, which was, we had Carlo plus 7. That won pretty easily. Gavin's advice was, stop being a coward and go for Carlo with the win. I have to give him credit for that. I had Longford plus 3, another easy win. We had Down to beat Antrim. Just wanted to get off the mark. That was 6-1 on one. And we had Derry plus 6 against Donegal. So that would have been a push, which meant the other three would have come in. It would have worked out about 3-1. So, finally, week 15, we got a winner. We're going to double it up this week, Mark, in week 16.
I wouldn't be so sure about that. I'd like to start well, the accumulator.
Another
section.
Great endorsement. While I finally felt confident about this slot, Mark immediately dismisses it.
Well, I had to go up the accumulator section, so I've looked in depth at the fixtures and it's very difficult. But I'd like to start off this week's accumulator section I have a couple of prepared statements on last week's. I wasn't here, obviously, and there was a lot of things said on the show. Some of it was absolutely slanderous.
You were here for a minute at the end. We all had to
Well, I should have come back in earlier, because there are two things I'd like to clear up. One is, talk for ages about how Gavin had come the closest of anyone last week, when in fact I was also one away from the very first game I did, which was like on the second or third week of the show, and I think it just lost on a handicap.
Old news. Actual money winner now, over here
that's,
now. Yeah.
That's gone. Secondly, I was also falsely accused. I was also falsely accused of poo-pooing Gavin's accumulator the week before.
Can I word again?
When in fact,
what did you do?
I poo-pooed it. when about your accumulator, would say Fermanagh to beat Armagh and all that. When it was actually Mick who did it, and Mick sat here and kept his mouth shut as you slandered me live on air, saying, "Oh yeah, sorry. Mark dismissed the whole thing." And Mick would, yeah, he did, yeah.
Dismissed
when it was actually
what? Sorry,
Mick.
I obviously wasn't listed then, and wasn't listed there now either, which is why this.
When
all
Gavin
happened.
Had his accumulator 2 weeks ago,
yeah.
You laughed him off. You said, Gavin went, Fermanagh to beat Armagh, you went, well, there's the accumulator lost already.
Oh, did, yeah.
And then I was accused of being the person who did that, when I actually backed Gavin up.
Ah, right.
So I just like to, my right, reputation well, to be built there, and obviously,
I'd like to officially apologise to the people of Fermanagh and Mark Farley. Thank and you. Indeed, Gavin.
Sorry,
for poo-pooing in the first place.
Mad dog Farley. It's just really easy to slag off the guy that's not here, to be honest.
It is true, yeah.
That's why I did it.
Sorry. So anyway, Morris is an arsehole. Where was I?
What?
Just wanted to slag off someone who wasn't here. He said it'd be easy.
So it's not.
This week's accumulator, very difficult. Kerry against Clare. I'm going for Clare plus 8 in that one.
On the banner.
What do you think of that?
I don't know what Kerry are like this year. That's my problem. Yeah. I haven't a clue what they're like. I think that there's no reason to think Clare can't get within 8 points.
Where's the game on?
The game is on in, I think, Killarney.
All right. It is on in Killarney, which is not great. But I don't know. Clare have been very, very impressive so far this year.
Galway versus Wexford in the hurling. I've gone for Galway -3 here. I know Wexford will be up for it, but I think Galway are going to pull away at the end.
Okay.
Ooh, 6 point win, I think, for Galway.
It's in Wexford Park, is it? It is.
Yeah.
It is in Wexford Park.
It is in Wexford, yeah.
Antrim against Westmeath in the Joe McDonagh. This is, of course, my guaranteed loss because I cannot win a single bet in the Joe McDonagh this year. I've gone for Antrim +1 against Westmeath. Antrim have lost to Laois. Westmeath have won every game. I don't know if Antrim are going to win it, but the +1 and the handicap I like.
I'm with you, yeah.
I'm not poo-pooing, but I'm also not endorsing. I think that going against Westmeath is dangerous.
And then finally, we've got Monaghan against Fermanagh in the Ulster Championship. I'm going for Monaghan half-time, Monaghan full-time.
That's where I'm out.
Okay.
You will remember my other big bet of the year. I had two big bets back in February. I had Kildare to beat Carlow. Carlo to beat Kildare. Not realising that Carlo actually had to beat someone to get there first. And I also have a tip for Manon Donegal to be in the Ulster final. So I'm going to stick to my guns and say for Manon I'll win it.
That's all right. Well, that comes in about 9-1. The other bet idea I had was Dublin half-time, Dublin full-time against Offaly instead of Antrim and Westmead, but then your accumulator's only 5.8-1, so you're better off putting a bet on a single thing that's 5.8-1, I think, than an accumulator.
The walls seem to be coming in around us here, so I'm just going to get
grinders going.
Really quickly, will you just run through that bet again, just for people to hear it?
Yeah, we've got Antrim +1 against Westmead, we've got Galway -3 against Wexford, Monaghan half-time, Monaghan full-time against Fermanagh, and Clare +8 against Kerry.
Right. Well, okay. Well, we had a winner this week anyway, so if we go again, then we might it's accumulator, so we'd already be almost in profit for the year. So, you know, go with Mark. He's almost trustworthy. Look at his face.
I trust that mad dog.
Yeah, I trust that mad dog anywhere. So that's it for this week, unless there's anything else, Mark.
Two things. One, subscribe to us on iTunes, rate the whole show, leave a comment, all that crack.
Yeah.
Also, join
numbers going up every week. Part of the fun.
Exactly. Join our so-called Weaker Counties Facebook group as well, which is on Facebook. Have a look at that. And get involved both in it and also for Around the Weaker Counties. As we have said before, we've kind of gone away from it slightly because I keep forgetting to ask people for it. But get in touch the way Sean Gannon does, the way everybody else does. You know, give us your match reports. It doesn't have to be anything lengthy or anything, even a tweet or anything. Just say what you thought of the game, like John Connors did. Or John O'Connor, I should say, not John Connors, the
Terminator 2 guy.
Yeah, exactly. I think, no, John Connors is Blackie Connor's brother. John Connor was the Terminator 2 lad, wasn't he? But anyway,
that's right,
yeah. Neither Terminator nor Blackie Connors nor John Connors have been in touch. John and O'Connor brothers. Has been in touch, though. Those who know, just let us know what you think of the game and any match you've been at. And that's pretty much it.
Right, so we'll be back with you next week. Have a good weekend. Enjoy the games.